Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Okay, everybody, we've just launched our new website. It's www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. You can click on the navigational links up top. There's the home link, the services link, the donation page link is there as well. When you get ready to own your own business, for those of you who own your own business or want to own your own business, there's a link available up top for that. Also, all of the previous audios that we've done on our wealth building classes, so click on the wealth building class link for all your previous audio. You can go in anytime you get ready, and as we go along, we'll add our new audio plugs under that title, the wealth building class link. Okay, www.newdebtelimination.com.
Welcome, Moors the Moorish Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana El Bay, and this evening we're gonna get together here because we need to discuss this. This is very, very serious, and I'm looking for some audience participation on this thing here. We're dealing with why are so many people of African descent failing in business today. And that's what we want to deal with. We want to deal with the questions such as, what are the main causes for business failure among people of African descent? How important is record keeping? What steps need to be taken to correct the problem? What about personal self-management? What about plans and goals? What type of education should we have? What about investments? Now, these are the top-flight questions that we want to get together here this evening and answer. And we're going to hear from some of our people. I got my favorite millionaire on there. He's going to give us some new stuff from some different angles here. But I need to know from the audience, because y'all looking at this thing just like I am. We all out here, and we see this thing. And I'm wondering, because I'm looking at my brothers and sisters, they are opening up these businesses and attempting to be in business all over the United States, and I see them go up, I see them come down. I see them open the doors one day, and the next day, thing they know, they close the doors. I'm trying to figure out, you know, why is it that other people open the doors and don't stay open? Why is it that we open up a business, and then the next thing I know, the doors close, and we move it someplace else? I mean, it seems to me that there's a lack of strategic planning or something going on. Area code 402. Tell me who you are, where you're calling from, what you got on this.
Hey, Tahaka, this is Prentice. Come from Omaha, Nebraska.
Okay.
I think it is, to answer your question, I think it's the togetherness that we have as a community, as well as the saving. We don't save as a whole, as a group, like other individual group as other individual nationalities. plus, we're on the back end. We have so much that we have to deal with mistrust, not trusting each other. And
why you think? Well, wait a minute now. Why you think we don't trust? What's causing us not to trust each other?
I think it's the positions that we have been through and have gone through history, like the Willie Lynch syndrome, and it's just a dog-eat-dog world, you know. And you see so many people against you that you don't know who to trust.
Okay, so you think a lot of brothers and sisters just feel like when it comes to us, we just outright can't trust each other. I mean, even though we don't know anything about the person, but just because we know it's somebody that looks like us, there's some type of inbred mistrust.
I believe so. I think we're bred it that way, yeah. I would use that word, yeah. Bred that way or taught that way to distrust each other.
Uh-huh. Okay. And so then we have to look at this from a position of a customer and a store owner, business owner. So, you know, why is it that the customer, if you got a guy that owns a business, why would the customer distrust him? What you think? You know, and I'm just trying to get some feedback on this thing. What you think is the cause? Why we are not willing to patronize our own?
Patronize our own because it's all about, it comes back to that coming together and looking out for each other. We don't have that same kinship that we have. Or used to have, and the kinship is lost between generations, where uncles don't trust the nephews don't trust the cousins, and it goes on down the line where it's just mistrust all the way around.
Okay, well, I can look at some situations firsthand because I call myself being in business at several different times, and I always ran into this situation where you know me, we've been knowing each other all our life, we know each other and I've been knowing you, I shouldn't be expected to pay you for your product. What do you think that comes from?
That's expectations of since I've known you, I didn't have to pay for anything, but as soon as you get something, a ghost, or try to do something, then it's always, I'm going to have to charge you for this, I have to charge you for that, and I have to charge you interest with this, you know.
Well,
I think it's just a misunderstanding of defining business with what actually needs to go on and what actually needs to happen.
Well, this is what I'd be looking at. Okay, all right. I'm serious about this topic tonight because I'm looking at this thing, and this actually is a phenomenon to me. This is a phenomenon. When we go to Walmart, Kmart, Air Goods, any major grocery store, we go inside these places and we'll drop the money, we'll pay for anything. And, I mean, it don't have to be at one of these places. We go to a flea market. And
right.
It seems to me Huh?
I said like Quick Trip or something.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to me that there's no questions asked. I mean, we reach in our pocket and we pay the money. We go to Chinese restaurant, we go to Arab restaurant, grocery store, whatever, and no questions asked. Whatever the price is up there, it seems that we're willing to pay this hell, no argument, no nothing. We don't, no fuss, no nothing. But when it comes to each other, well, brother, I need to get a discount. I need man. You need to give brother something. You know, you should be giving me this. And I'm trying to figure how is it possible for me to remain in business, and pay for products that I have to market and survive if I'm constantly giving everybody that comes my way that look like me a discount or something free. How is that possible? And it's not.
Not possible at all. I don't think it's possible at all to stay in business. And you keep on having to give out discounts.
Yeah. You're right.
Excuse my language, that's asinine, you know, but it don't make no sense.
Well, it seems to me that it's some type of inbred mental mechanism inside the brain. It's like the fact that I'm in business does not, I can't respect you, okay, you can't expect me to pay top dollar for the product you have versus paying top dollar that the Chinese, or Arab, or Caucasian, or Jew, or anybody that look like you. These people are qualified for me to pay them top dollar for what they're offering, but when it comes to you, I can't do that. You know my circumstances. You know my condition, so therefore you should go out of business trying to help me.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I'm saying that is because I call myself selling little music and movies and stuff like that, and I had a cousin. He got diamond rings on his finger. His wife drive a big Escalade, got a big Escalade and a nice home and all that. And he come around the house, he said, man, what new music you got? I said, well, I got all the latest stuff. Okay, well, I need to get so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so. I said, okay. So I go get the music and come out, and I say, all right, I got six copies. Okay, all right. Hey, wait. And I put it in his hand. I so sure appreciate this. I say, hey, you ain't paying me. Oh man, I ain't got no money. We just came from church. I don't care where you came from with my money. Well, man, you know we scuffling, man. Give me my stuff back. Get him. But now I'm looked at, frowned upon, and talked about because I ain't give you something. And try my best to remain in business at the same time. So what I'm wondering is if when they went to buy the Escalade, did they tell the people that sold them the Escalade that they need to give them something? If they went to the jewelry store and told the people at the jewelry store that they needed to give them the jewelry or any parts of it, any kind of way. So if that's not the case, why? If I'm trying to be in business just like everybody else, why am I expected to give you something? And this is what I'm trying to figure out. What's the justification for that? Can you help me with that one?
I don't think there is a justification for that. It's just, like you said, inbred, always looking for something that ain't really there and really don't know how to deal, and too many people of African descent don't deal in business.
Okay. Well, hold on a minute. Hold on a minute. Let me open up this other line here.
Mm-hmm.
Area code 216.
Hey, what's up, Charlie? How you doing?
Hey, man, I'm just fine, brother. Tell me who you are, where you calling from, what's your question, comment?
Well, this is our show. You're talking about the Cleveland. I just wanted to chime in on that.
Okay.
I think, you know, it's a multitude of things, you know, that contribute to this conditioning. And one is, you know, one that we suffer from is like the crab in the barrel, the crab in the bucket syndrome. Like, you come out the same bucket as me, you know. And then if I see you doing something, you know, they trying to pull you down. Or like you say, they getting at you. If you going into business for yourself, here they come. They want it. They want something for free. They want to handle it. And then, you know, secondly, you know, we just don't know. Yeah, I guess we, you know, we really don't know the principles of business, period. You know, operation and the principles of it, and like investing back into the business. So if I'm steady giving product away, I'm going to be out of business very short. You know, and I guess, you know, it, you know, we just don't know these things. And, you know, so when it comes to, you know, other ethnicities, you know, like you said, you know, they'll pay top dollar without question. But then, you know, when they see, you know, the brother over there trying to, you know, make it, it's a different story. And it all,
okay.
and it's like our position on the social and political ladder. You know, we're not supposed to have none of this, or so we say, or so they think.
Okay, well now, if we got, because this thing here is phenomenal, what I'm looking at, this is a phenomenon. And I'm trying to get to the, I pretty much know what the basic rudiments of the problem is. But I don't feel like I should have to fight. If I'm going to own a business, I shouldn't have to fight my brother, be kicked down, talked about, and all this right here, and disrespected because I own a business and I'm trying to own a business. Now, what is interesting to me is, and this is the most interesting part that I find, if I had a job working on a job and I'm struggling and I'm trying to pay my bills and this, that, and the other, and a brother come by and he first thing he want to know is, where you work at? You know, and I tell him where I work at. So, yeah, I work so we need to get together and, you know, we can do this and we can go here and spend money. We can go here and spend money. We can go here and spend money. And all this and everything is okay. Every once in a while, he might get in tough, but he comes to another man that's in a subservient position on a job, and can you help me out? And you say you ain't got it. Man, he made good money over there. You know, I mean, I know he had the money, man. He could have, you know. This is the most amazing thing to me is as if somebody else is counting my money for me.
Yeah.
When that's my stuff.
Yeah.
So, now, when it comes to business, what do you think? In your opinion, and I'm going to ask my other brother because he's still online. I'm opening up his line in a minute. What do you think is the solution to this phenomenal national problem that we got among our people?
Well, the solution is they need to go ahead and that talk of power economics and get to understand the business, the commerce game and how to play. I think that's one of the solutions. They could go ahead and get started with that. And other than that, you know, the information, a lot of this information is not hidden information. You know, so when you ask the right question, then you will begin to get the right answer, but only when you start asking the right question. We never ask the right question. Well, you know what I'm saying? So we you know, it's like we on a hamster wheel, a lot of us. You know, we just spinning in circles and going nowhere. And so, it's six principles to business, man. You know, and if we get that down pat, and then maybe we can start moving forward. But if they go get that power knowledge package, man, and get into that commerce game, then that's a good starting point right there.
Well, I have to agree with you 100%, and we're going to deal with that tonight. But I also know that everybody, because there's a lot of people, ain't got no business in no business nowhere trying to run there. I know that too. There's certain people who just, in my opinion, born to be out of business. You know, based on what I've seen and the thinking patterns and the stuff that I've seen them do, there's no way that they can be successful in a business based on what I've seen. Just starting up and trying to do some stuff. So, what do you think is the solution as far as the educational aspect of this thing? What type of education do you think that we need to concentrate on? Those of us who are not in business are contemplating on being in business and have the potential to be in business. What type of education do you think we need to concentrate on?
Business administration and
okay. Now, so the brothers and the sisters that are out here, and this question is directed at area code 402. Are you still with me, brother? 402, are you still with me? Okay. All right. Anyway, I want to get on with are you there, brother?
Hello? Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. Okay. Now, how do you think that, you know, in your opinion, let's say that you're in business, right? You got your own business. You're doing all right. You're following the principles of business and wealth and all of this stuff, and you're doing good. How do you think you should handle a brother or sister that expectations is that you ought to give them something because you're in business, opposed to somebody else that they never asked that type of benefit from? How you think you're supposed to handle that?
Well, I'm gonna give you a difficult. I'm gonna be the devil's advocate right here, and you know, what's to say that you know, them same people or the same persons that you're speaking of ain't trying to you know, rob you for whatever you got or whatever whatnot. Just because they like the brother said, they on the like you said, crabs in the barrel or monkeys in the barrel type of scenario as well.
Okay. But now if somebody came to you with this type of situation, how would you handle it?
You got to understand where that person is coming from and everything like that. But then at the same time, you're always going to have protection in yourself. So and protection of those around you. You know, me, you know, I'd probably handle the situation, and, you know, anyway, and that I have to, you know.
Okay, but I'm just saying, and I'm not saying that somebody's coming to try to take something from you. What I'm saying is they're expecting you to give them something, just because you look like them.
Right, right.
You know?
And on that note, you know, I would just have to tell them that it's not business. It's not personal. It's not have anything to do with anything that's personal. Just something that's business. And that's just how you deal in business. If they couldn't deal in business, I would see from a customer aspect how I could help that customer more and be more productive with my customers.
Okay, now, so you're saying that you would discuss them becoming more productive and being in business for themselves, opposed to looking for somebody to give them something because they look like them.
Absolutely, as well as being the owner and being always communicative with your customers and making sure that they get a product that they like and they also appreciate the price of it at where it's at, so they do keep on coming back.
Okay, I'm asking this because I had a brother told me one time. He said, "Man, you know, I can't believe that you actually gave somebody something. As if that's the only way I'm supposed to do something. I'm not supposed to be in business and own a business and at the same time." Not give away all the product and remain in business, which is impossible. So I've listened to other broadcasts and I've heard other people come in and said that, well, you know, y'all need to set up this group and stuff and give these people this stuff over here and all this, and I'm always faced with what I know about the principles of wealth and all of this stuff, because I've had a lot of information and learned a lot of things from a lot of wealthy people. And these people thinking is nothing like ours, a lot of us, that I have come in contact with. These millionaires, their thinking is totally different from a lot of the thinking patterns from a lot of people that I have ran into that look like me. So,
can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
How would you say, on my comment earlier, the saving part, how we don't know how to save enough to establish us into a place where we work as a whole?
You mean as a save, accumulate enough money to operate as a nation?
Absolutely.
Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, I have to answer that question this way. I don't think that's the problem. That's not the problem of us actually having the money, because I've had brothers and sisters tell me, "Man, you need to give this and give that away and stuff." And because we, you know, black folks ain't got no money. I said, well, that's strange. I ain't living in a nice home and driving nice cars. And when I go in certain stores, they packed in there and they stayed. So I don't know where you get this information from.
But a lot of us are dealing with debt.
Huh?
I said a lot of us are dealing with debt and are under the foot of bills. So how do we come out of that?
I have to agree. And we're going to address that too. That you're absolutely correct.
We have a lot of debt as far as we go to school and try to educate ourselves, and then we get stuck under student loans. We go to these houses, and now you got to pay. You get the house, and you got to pay property tax, and then and that's an arm and a leg. And then you got your regular food bills and everything like that. You got your rent. If you don't have a home, then you're renting from somebody, and they charging you an arm and a leg. And how do you come out of a situation like that and actually get your foot from off the ground? Because what I've been listening to with you is that, you know, the Caucasians don't have to deal with so much stuff like that. You know, they have they operate differently, as you say. Millionaires,
well,
and everything that operate a little differently.
Well, what I notice among these people is they have a common thread in place. And it goes back to a principle that you can, as long as a plant is attached to its roots and connected to its roots and its culture and its ground and all of this stuff, then the plant will grow collectively. They will, you know, all of those plants of those kinds will grow collectively, and they will thrive given the opportunity. But we're dealing with a people inside the United States that's been disconnected from their roots. And it has had a devastating effect. So that would be one of the most basic things that we need to keep in mind and not constantly talk about, constantly make every effort on an individual basis for reconnection, because that is a very, very strong footing. Because we got this thing now where we're trying to look like somebody else. We're trying to sound like somebody else. Our mannerism resembles somebody else. I mean, if you look at the news broadcasts and television broadcasts and on the radios and all this stuff, you will see us imitating somebody else who's connected to their culture. So somebody else's style of dress, somebody else's hair, somebody else's shoes, somebody else's, everything belongs to somebody else. And this is what I see. Now, in order for us to have wealth, and it's quite a few of us inside this country that do have wealth, but once again, we're still disconnected. We don't have that common thread. We are respectable toward everybody else that's connected to their culture, but we won't put forth all the necessary effort on a massive scale to connect to us, to ours, because we have, in my opinion, I don't think we understand how valuable it is for us to have that and to do that. Now, there are many, many attacks against us to keep us away from that, to keep us concentrating on something other than that. But I'm a living witness and a firm believer and a living witness that no man can respect you until you respect yourself.
I have to agree with you there, where we don't really, that we are in a difficult position. Other nationalities are in the human family, and we're not in the human family, which is a big issue. So it's like we are trees or orange sitting on the corner or something like that, and are detached and basically saying property. And they're worse than property because we're not part of the human family. I think that was one of the biggest issue there is where.
So you're talking about we have been remaining complacent, so to speak, and allowing somebody else to define our reality for us.
And not only to define the reality that we come from, but the history, the culture that we attach ourselves with, and everything else.
Okay. All right. Well, I have to agree, but 100%. But in my opinion, I think that a man should never allow another man to define his reality. You should never allow a criminal to describe the crime. You should always make every effort to connect to your own roots and culture. Now, once you do that, you have an entirely different thinking pattern. Totally different. One of the most interesting things that I've found in dealing with people, especially people from other races, when they're talking to me. And they always ask me, well, you know, what do you do? Because you seem to be odd. You don't seem to think like the rest of these people here. You don't do things a little bit different. I said, well, I teach. And the first thing, well, what do you teach? I said, well, I teach my people about their culture and their ancient story. Okay, now we're ready to sit down because I need to talk to you because you're talking about the solution. So I need to hold a conversation with you. And I don't respect you because you're talking about getting it right. And I've had these conversations over and over and over. And every time they tried to tell me something I knew I was a lie, I had to object and correct them on that. And I spoke to people from Asia and the Arabs. And they tried to tell me, well, back where I come, I said, well, first of all, the Greeks were very interesting. One Greek guy, well, you ever heard of Alexander the Great? I said, whoa, stop right there. I said, wasn't nothing great about him. I said, wasn't nothing great about him. I said, you mean Alexander the Greek? And then I gave him the breakdown on all of that stuff like that. So now it's a whole different ball game. When they see me now, how you doing? You know, they want to shake my hand and want to put me ahead of everybody else because a man can't respect you until you respect yourself. If you don't know nothing about your own self and you're doing everything you can to kiss his boots and try to be accepted by him, how can he respect you? He can't. Now, in order to pull this off, you have to actually know something. You know something about you, your ancient culture, your story, and all that right there. Now, that's the underlying factor. So now, once we get that straight now we're prepared and ready to go in business and handle the business and from every conceivable angle. Every angle. I've had a policeman come out here, and especially when we have a little gym open, and they say, well, man, that's nice. They say, well, did you do this? I say, yes, I did this. Oh, wow. Well, did you have a lot of young men come around here and work out? I said, well, no. I said, I try to encourage them, and I have a few. And I said, but the most important thing that I do when they come here, along with their exercise and stuff, I say, I try to teach them about their ancient culture and stuff. Oh, you do? Oh, okay. Well, what do you teach them? You're waking them up. Are you really waking them up? What's going on? Let me know so I know what to watch out for. I mean, this is the attitude that I give them, these people. You know, anytime I'm mentioning something about telling them the truth about their self and the ancient culture and stuff, because they know that is the solution, being connected to your ancient story and stuff. What do you think about that?
I'd have to agree with you totally and indefinitely, because once you
it
know...
It worked for me every single time. It worked for me.
Yeah. I do agree with that totally. And they have a
when they have that understanding and that respect for their ancestors and all their the ones that came before them, before slavery and everything like that, then they have an appreciation of their culture and history.
Well, I don't usually talk to them about slavery. What I do is I go beyond that, and the deeper we get into the conversation, because the first thing that I have to do is I have to straighten out their perception of what they have been taught and their true history. I have to do it with the Arabs, I have to do it with the Greeks, have to do it with the Europeans, have to do it with the Asians and stuff. And the Asians, they be like in a state of shock when they find it out. And I begin to mention the XIA dynasties and stuff, and the African dynasties that occupied China, the first dynasties and stuff. And they say, well, I never knew anything about it. And I give them the web address so they can go and read it for themselves and all that right there. And so I guess ain't nothing left but respect. Well, I told you the truth and then gave you verification of truth. You can find it. So what are you going to do? Get mad with me because I know who I am? Come on. Anyway, hold on a minute, brother, and we're going to be right back, okay?
Sounds good.
All right. Now, we're going to get some opinions from someplace else. Y'all hold on. Hold your head a second.
All right, people. It's your man, DSD Informed again. I'm back. It's been a while, but I've been crazy busy trying to take care of business. But this video right here is going to touch upon some reasons why I feel like black businesses fail in our communities. One of the main reasons I feel that is that they fail is simply from lack of support from the community in itself. I find that too many people want deals or handouts. Like they feel like because they're black and you're going to someone with a black business that they should get free stuff or that they should get it for a discount rather than paying the prices on the tag. I understand if stuff is highly overpriced, but understand too, especially if you're running a private business, that you have to make your money on the back end. A lot of these major large corporations and things like that can afford to sell things at lower prices or almost at the price that they paid for it because they make their money back in other ways. But when you're working and you're selling stuff out that you paid for mostly out of pocket, you have to charge a little bit extra. That way there's profit. You know, the purpose of business is profit. A lot of people aren't willing to even deal with black people. Like even black people dealing with black people, like there's just something going on that makes us not want to deal with us. There's a lot of things with that, and I'm going to touch on those in a few. People acting funny because people don't want to cut deals. Like, again, that feeling that, oh, you know, you're my brother, we're black, we should do this. And because I don't want to cut you a deal or I don't want to give you a discount, you feel that you shouldn't deal with me. But then you'll go across town to the Arabs or to the whites or the Latinos or whomever else and spend your money there and pay the same price. And pay those same fees, but because I'm black, you feel that you deserve to have a discount. And if I don't give it to you, you will go somewhere else and spend that money. And some people just have too much loyalty to other places. You've been shopping over here and over there and over, you know, this way and another so long that you feel like you can't afford, not money-wise, but literally just can't afford to switch up and try something new. When in reality, that person was trying something new when you first did it. You know, you always try something new sooner or later. Even your favorite thing in the world, it was something new to you before it was your favorite thing in the world. And then, too, you have this idea of jealousy and envy. We as people want to move forward in life so much that we hate to see somebody else getting it, and we're not. He has a business. Oh, I can have my own business. Get my own business. Why would I give money to him when I can get it myself from somewhere else? See, that right there is why we'll never get anywhere. We'll never get anywhere with that type of mindset, with those type of people being the main ones in the community trying to hold somebody back. The idea of black people moving forward was described as crabs in a bucket. Crabs in a bucket don't see the crab trying to get out and look to help it and push it over. They look to pull it back down because in their mind, as long as I'm not going to make it, as long as I'm stuck here, you're going to be stuck here with me. And we need to change that, because all together we can just link up and we can just all just use this one that's getting out and doing better as momentum to get us out so that we all can do better. You see, even the one that's on the bottom benefits from the one on top. If the one on top and the ones that's in between the one on the bottom are willing to help. Another reason, you know, another point of this is that a lot of black businesses fail to promote themselves, or they have bad promotion. Like, even though they're doing a lot of promotion and putting themselves out there, you know, they're doing it horribly. They're doing it wrong. And a lot of that comes from just an ideal of what black is. And, you know, just putting things, the promotions being one-sided or being stereotypical and aimed at certain individuals, in the community rather than being a general thing aimed at black people specifically. You know, you might have some ghetto flyers or some flyers of people putting on fronts trying to look all proper and elegant and things of that nature. So you therefore turn off one part of your community when we all need to just form together and get things right. So you have to find a neutral zone, even if it means spending a little extra money out of pocket, putting together more and more flyers and more promotions that reach out to both types or even multiple types of people. You have to find that range. Get something that everybody would like. You can't have just one thing for one set of people, unless that's your demographic and who you're trying to sell to, and then maybe it will work for you. Also, black people, they feel like just because they're black that you should shop with them. So they shouldn't have to promote. You should see that it's a black owner and want to automatically go there. But all businesses need promotion. They have to reach out to their consumer. And sooner or later, that reputation will build up. And then you will have people just coming to you. You know, word of mouth is a great thing. But word of mouth is usually started by someone's mouth. So you have to get out there and promote yourself. And I do it all the time. Any chance I get, I look at, you know, slipping my name somewhere, sliding a video link or sliding my website or something like that. Like, you have to really get in there and push yourself and push people to, you know, see you. You know, you don't have to be arrogant about it or, you know, go overboard with it, obnoxious, but just get people to see you and know. Another thing is location. And this comes again with the idea of the front. There's such thing as bad neighborhoods. There are bad places that, you know, like they said, businesses, location, location, location. It's all about where you put it. If you put it in a place where it's unsafe, and, you know, like there's so much violence and such stuff going on, people are not going to come. I don't care who they are, except for the people around there. Of course, they're going to come because you're right there. It's convenient. People putting stuff too far out. In my hometown where I'm living at now, a lot of businesses that used to be downtown, very convenient for people all over the city, are kind of moving themselves out toward the outskirts of the city. You know, it's kind of like the inner city, then it's like the little area around the city, then it's the outskirts, and then it's just like the county. And this is, you know, referred to as the country, the little small hick town that's around before you get to any other major city that's in between. They're kind of moving to that outskirt area. So if you live in the inner parts of the city, it's very difficult for you to get there. And that just kind of goes along with the idea of the business being unreachable. Like, even public transportation doesn't go that far. So forget about convenience of walking and things of that nature, but it costs gas and stuff to even drive out that far just for a whim, just to go look. You're not even sure you're going to buy anything. You just want to go look, and you have to spend this type of money and this amount of time just to get there. So that's another thing. Product. It's something that people don't, and that goes back to the promotions and, you know, things of that nature. You only have one type of product. You feel that it's okay to just have the trends of today, failing to realize that everybody doesn't dress that way. Everybody doesn't wear that type of clothing or follow those trends. I personally don't follow trends. I like my jeans and my t-shirt and my boots. That's really me. That's it. You know, it's nothing too baggy. I don't sag. I do wear my pants with a belt around my waist. Basic t-shirts, nothing too big, but nothing tight. It's fitting enough for my size. That's just my style. So I need to know that if I go into a store, that I can find that. And also people that like to wear clothes three times too big or four sizes too small. Those things you need to have. Yeah, you do need to follow trends. You know, trends are necessary. But unless you have a certain demographic that you're trying to reach, a certain clientele, then you really need to have a plethora, a variety of things in your store. And even if you're trying to reach a certain type of clientele, you still need diversity in your product to get them in there. Just because guys wear skinny jeans don't mean they all want to wear the same brand. Or don't mean they all wear the same size. Doesn't mean that they all want the same colors, you know, the same styles. Those things have to vary, even in specific. And then, too, don't just have black people's stuff. Don't be racist. Do not be racist or stereotypical, excuse me, in the things that are in their stores. A lot of people do that, and it goes for anybody. They just feel like because these are black people, and you look at what black people wear, and this is what I need to have in my store. Sure, but that's not what all of them wear. So you have to diversify. Entitlement. Again, feeling that just because you're black, you know, excuse me for looking down over here, but I have my notes kind of off here to the side just so I can kind of keep on point. They feel that because they're black, that people should shop with them. That's what I was pointing out earlier. And also feeling that because they're black, people should just accept it. Like, whatever I have. And because we brothers and we sisters, you know what I mean, my man, everything, then you should just accept what I have and what I give you and support me regardless. That's bullcrap. Because if I can get a better product from anybody, regardless of race, creed, religion, or whatever you want to categorize them in, that's what I'm going to go see. Because they're giving me what I'm looking for. And, you know, that's one major thing. I know a lot of people that shop at white stores. I guess these are the people that kind of do their promotions towards Caucasian American, European Americans, because of the size. Like, we as people fit different. We're different sizes. But if your body style is fitting in those type of clothes, of course that's where you would go. It just makes logical sense. So these businesses fail because they just feel like people just need to just shop with them because I'm black. You're black, I'm black. Shop with me, period. And this all just ties into the fact of unprofessionalism. Just not carrying yourself or your store or treating your customers with, you know, proper respect and in a professional manner. So, you know, you have to be aware of these things, because if you don't, you're really going to lose out. So, I mean, most, you know, just to touch up on, the lack of support from the community, we as black people really got to get out and support our own. You have so many other races of types of people that support themselves. You know, we're the only ones who allow other races to move their businesses into our community, thrive off of our money, but don't give back to our community. We take black people, move into a black community, make black people buy your product, and don't give anything back to them. You send your money elsewhere. You know, a little thing from Norbit, the movie, the Eddie Murphy movie, and he was raised by the Chinese guy or Japanese guy. He was raised by the Asian guy, no doubt. And he was like, you know, I don't like blacks or Jews, but blacks and Jews like Chinese food. Go figure. We have this thing where we allow people to come into our neighborhood and present us with things that don't benefit us. We give them everything we have, and they don't give us anything back. You know, if you go to a store, and you've been shopping at this store for 20, 30 years, like your grandmother was shopping at this store. She took your mom there when the store first opened. now your mom's been going there, and now you've been going there since you were, this place has been around forever, and they still treat you like the average everyday guy that's never came in there before. These people know you by name. You went to school with their kids and all of this type of stuff. And they still treat you just like you're nobody or you're just a customer. No loyalty to you. And you don't care. You take it. But let that be your brother that treats you like that, and there's a problem. And that's good that it's a problem, but maybe the problem is that you don't support them enough. You know? Maybe the thing is that we really need to get together and get our stuff right, and we'll work out so much better. Show support. Support your black artists like myself, and really give us a chance. You know, tell us. Don't expect us to just know. Really give us a shot, because we need it. As black people, we're going to have to, because until we start to get our own, like everybody else has got it together, and they're getting their own. So until we get our own, we can't complain about not having. We spend, you know, I looked up something, and this is a real quick nitpick before I go off. I found out that black people spend some odd hundreds of billions of dollars on Christmas, Kwanzaa, and holiday specials and sales every year. Yet we don't have our own schools. Our communities are owned by other people. We don't even buy the stuff that's in our communities. We don't own it. All of the businesses in our communities are ran by other races and things like that, and they don't put back into our community. We don't have community centers or tutoring programs and things like that in our community, but we spend money, billions of dollars. We're talking monumental amounts of money and put them into other people. So think about that. That's one reason, you know, black people, we are a business, and that's one thing that's why we fail. So, yeah, look into it. If you're going to open a business or you know people with business, pass on the word. You know, comment, let me know what you think. Please like and subscribe. Pass this word on, especially to our black brothers and sisters, so they can learn and know that this is what we have to do. We have to support our black businesses. We have to get them to promote. And if we like what they're providing, promote them. If you're in Wilson, North Carolina, look up Nige. Is where the old Howard's Convenience Store used to be. He's a Jamaican brother, has great food and great product. Go in there and check them out. I eat there all the time when I'm on break and stuff from school. The barbecue sauce for the chicken, my God. The curry goat on point. See what I'm saying? It's a promotion. I'm sending this out to the world. If you're ever in this area, go there and support. Make sure your location is in a good spot. Be on point about that. Try to be as neutral as possible. Make sure your product is good. Variety is necessary. Of course, you want to appeal to the masses, but don't lean too much one way. And don't feel entitled. Understand that people want to go where they want to go, but all you can do is hope and pray that they'll come to you. And maybe, just maybe, you'll be successful. And be sure to give back. Be sure to give back, because not only should you support them, not only should they support you, but you should support them as well. So be about that. Peace. I'm out. DSD informed.
Freeing up capital to make investments may not be as hard as you think. For those of you who have Facebook accounts, send me a friend request over there on Facebook and LinkedIn to Tahaka Amana Elbay. That's T-A-R-A-H-A-K-A. Amana is A-M-A-A-N-A and then E-L and of course B-E-Y. And you'll be able to see the actual documents clearly showing you how I was able to cancel my mortgage and property taxes contracts, and that way I have freed up capital for investments. To get the apparatus to do this with, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. It's not as hard as you think. Send a friend request on Facebook, and I'll grant that request, and you can actually see the documents for yourself. Peace.
Okay, now we're back, Moles. Now, what I want to look at now is we want to look at the mechanics of going into business. We dealt with the foundation. Believe it or not, whether you're in business or you're not in business or whatever endeavor in your life that you're going to deal with, we need to look at connecting to our roots, okay, so that we can get respect and all of this stuff that we need. Because you'd be surprised how well that works for you, whether you're in business or you're not in business, especially if you are in business, okay? We're not talking about racism here. We're talking about doing something that every nation on the face of the earth is doing. It's just that when it comes to people of African descent inside the United States, we seem to feel like this is something that we should not invest any time in. But I'm here to tell you, as a living witness, that it is extremely valuable. You have no idea until you're able to get this here going and to use it. You know, you don't want to force anything on anybody, but if you ever communicate with anybody, make sure that they know where you're coming from, okay? So I want to get on with the talking about the business aspect of things for those of you who want to invest and be successful in business. First thing that you're going to need after you have decided what it is that you're going to use to generate some capital with, be in business about, or what product you're going to have and all that stuff, the first thing that we want to start looking at is the initial capital that's going to take to invest in something. Now, you will discover that today you have capital right there in your environment if you understand the principles to governing wealth. We got a couple of millionaires we're going to bring in here this evening. We're going to discuss that. But I want to give you the basic right now before we go into that so you understand. Okay, you got mortgages. You're paying taxes. You're paying car notes. These insurances, all of this stuff that's going on. These are contracts that you have accepted from somebody else, and these contracts are designed to benefit somebody else. Okay, and it automatically puts you in a liability. Your house is not an asset. Your house is a liability. Your automobile is a liability. It's not an asset. And so when we get this thinking understood, the first person to be paid when you get paid is you. A percentage of whatever it is that you earn as your income, the first person to get paid is you. If you make $100, 10% of that belongs to you. It's better than anything anybody else tells you about taking that income outside of your environment, okay? There's a lot of people say, well, you know, the law say we're supposed to give 10% to the church and all that. Well, okay, all right, that's what you believe, and you want to be in business. Okay, but my philosophy is this. The first person to be paid is me. On bank. If I earn the money, if I put in the toil, if I did the sweating and bleeding and working and scuffling and shoveling and I earn the money, the first person to get paid is me. Now for those of you who have jobs, the government made it against the law for you to get paid first. Okay, they already made it against the law because the government takes, they get paid first out of every earning you got, right off the top. You got Social Security, and then you got you have income tax, which is totally illegal for you to put an apportioned tax on somebody's income if they're working on a job. That's totally illegal, outright illegal. And then we have the Social Security tax. When the Congress has been telling us Social Security going broke and I'm trying to understand how they got money in the first place, when the Federal Reserve is printing debt notes, which is not money, and declared bankruptcy in 1933, took all the real money out of circulation, so where the money in the first place? Okay, but we ain't getting into all of that. We're going to deal with why we're not successful. Now, we dealt with some foundational issues in the beginning, but now let's get down to the brass mechanics of how to turn this thing around and how to take this money and invest it in going to business and make sure that we're able to survive for as long as the economies of the world remains. Okay? Now, you may not trust the government, but if you take the government and put on one side and you put gold on the other side, you might want to put a little bit more emphasis on the gold because the gold is respected every which way it's turned, worldwide. You say, well, you know, I have a wonderful government. Yeah. You say, well, I got gold. Okay, well, look, we can talk now. You understand what I'm saying? So we want to be realistic about some things. Because we have a whole lot of cliches and a whole lot of beliefs about a whole lot of things, but we need to start understanding the principles of wealth and the psychology of wealth and things of these of these natures. So if you are paying a mortgage, you can cancel that contract. You're paying property taxes. And if you do not own a business, if you're not running a business in your house, then you're paying property taxes. That's illegal. Okay, according to the law. Don't take my word for this. This is what the law said. Now, we already did a previous broadcast on that. I'm not going down into detail. But if you're paying $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 for a mortgage, that's $2,000 or $3,000 you can have in your pocket every month to invest in a business. Okay? Now, you cannot survive in a business without education. You cannot survive in a business without a complete and total understanding about the environment, especially if you're going to put a business in a community or somewhere. If you're going to open up a store, you're going to open up a restaurant and stuff, you need to look at the stats of opening up a restaurant. You know, what is the statistics inside the United States for the average restaurant owner? Okay, and a lot of people will tell you, well, you know, a restaurant is a very tricky business. But now you know for yourself for a fact that you get tired of eating certain foods all the time. Okay, so if you're going to be in business and you're going to have a restaurant, you got to make sure that you have enough people patronizing your restaurant. So when one person gets tired, another person is not, and then when they get tired, the other person is no longer tired, and they come back and you have got repeat business. Okay, so now we come to location. Location, location, location. So now we're talking about real estate being at the forefront of whatever we're trying to do if we plan to open up a business or restaurant. And pretty much the same thing happens on the Internet. Now, you got a whole lot of people that have these online businesses and stuff. Now, if you have online business, then you have to look at this thing realistically. Okay, what's my audience like? How many people am I presenting what I have to the public? How many people are there? And this is for people who have online businesses. Well, you know, what's my rate of return? If I'm investing 6, 7, 8 hours a day into operating an online business, what is my rate of return on that business? We have to look at that. Now, me personally, my thing is helping people because I'm looking at the overall conditions of the people. I know there is no money in America, and I know that my people are going to have to survive. So the best operation that I can be involved in is making sure that everything that they're able to get from me is something that's going to help them collectively as a nation of people. But it's available to everybody. This is not exclusive to people of African descent. It's available to everybody, but is directly something that my people can use and need and will benefit them. And I make sure of that because I'm going to say it again, to me, my people come first, and everybody else comes second. That doesn't make me prejudiced. That doesn't, well, it does make me prejudiced on any, but it does not make me a racist, okay? Because you cannot afford to love anybody else until you love yourself first. You can't go down the street and love somebody else that don't look like you if you don't love your own people. I've had a little European boy. He asked me, he said, Mr. Tahaka, do you love your people? I said, oh, yeah, there's a little bit of them pull up a seat. So you can clearly understand this, so you will never ask me this no more. And so I explained it from every conceivable angle to him so he'd get it right. But he was under the impression, some kind of way he got his mind on it, if somebody told it to him or where he got it from, but he seemed to be under the impression that we didn't even love one another. We hated one another. And he wanted to know, because I guess I was the closest brother, because he come from up in the, like, I think the Kentucky Mountains somewhere, and he'd been told a whole lot of stuff. But I guess he was told these things. I want to make sure he have something to take back up in the mountains when he go back. And tell him what I told him. So he can go tell the people that told him whatever he told him something different. But anyway, so when we look at the situation that we're currently in, okay, if you got a desire to be in business, you're going to need capital to be in business, okay? So if you are giving away money out of your environment for mortgage, you're giving away for your insurance or the registration and automobile note and all this stuff here, these are contracts that you accepted from somebody else. You have to examine every contract, because whoever gives you a contract, that contract is designed to benefit them. And when we understand some things, there are some things that we can do. Okay, now, I'm not going to go in all of the details on that, but what I am going to do is, if anybody got any questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. But I'm going to listen to some of the millionaires out here, so they can expose you to the thinking that they have and the things that they have learned that made them wealthy and cause them to have lifestyle that most of us dream about. Okay? So we're going to take a look at that, and when we come back, then we will deal with some more of this. Okay? So y'all hold on a minute, and we'll be right back. First one I'm going to look at is I'm going to listen to this gentleman here. And it's only going to be a few minutes, so y'all pay attention.
Over 20 years ago, I coined the expression, think big, and it's been a part of my life ever since. It's also come true. I became an even bigger success after I said it than I was before. And that's one reason I think it's an important way to think. It obviously works, and that's what I'm going to talk about today. What I said exactly in my first book, The Art of the Deal, is as follows. I like thinking big. I always have. To me, it's very simple. If you're going to be thinking anyway, you might as well think big. That book was a bestseller, and it's considered a business classic at this point. But I never thought those words would become bestsellers in their own right. It's an interesting point that I'm famous for two very short statements. Think big and you're fired. But let's stick to the first one for today. And I'd suggest strongly that you pay attention so that you won't have to hear the second one. Thinking big starts with the details and grows from there. Because I'm a builder, I'm very aware of the importance of having a good foundation. You can't take chances in construction. You can't be haphazard and say, well, maybe this will work, maybe it won't, so let's try it and find out. Because a lot of people will be at risk. I have to know if something will work or not. Every inch has to be accounted for. In other words, thinking big starts with being thorough. So number one, be thorough. Don't count on happenstance to get you anywhere, because it won't. Number two, get a momentum going and keep your momentum going. You have to have big ideas, but you've got to have the energy to get them done, which can sometimes take a long time. If you don't have momentum, you will not have what it takes to get the job done. Patience alone isn't enough. I have a lawyer friend who used to refer to me as the reverse tornado who builds everything in his path. I always like that because it implies a lot of energy and a lot of momentum. And that's exactly what it takes to get anything done. So keep your momentum going. Number three, stay focused. You have to stay focused. The minute you lose focus, you will also be losing your momentum. They go together, and you will accomplish a lot more, even amazing things, if you make sure you keep these two things working together for you. I've seen very talented people literally go down the drain because they couldn't seem to keep their focus long enough to get anything done. In this day of multitasking, that can be a real challenge, but it's absolutely necessary. Ask yourself this question, what should I be thinking about right now? That simple question can restore your focus in no time at all. And your answer right now should be, listening to Donald Trump. Number four, look at the solution, not the problem. This is very important if you ever want to learn to think big. And here's why. No matter what you do, you're bound to run into problems. It's just part of life, a part of business, a part of anything worth doing. If you let the problems get in your way, they'll become bigger than your idea was to begin with, and you will be a wipeout. No matter how bad things look, keep your focus on the solution, and you will be surprised how things can work out, and work out properly. One way I do this is to ask myself when confronting a possible problem, is this a blip or is this a catastrophe? A catastrophe is something like an earthquake, a tsunami, a war, and so forth, and a blip is everything else. Right away, you'll have the right perspective, and your equilibrium will be restored. So keep your focus on the solution. Number five, see opportunity for what it is, an opportunity. For example, why are you listening to me today? Curiosity, you like me, you don't like me, you want to learn, you have nothing else to do, you want to hear me tell you you're fired. I hope not, but whatever your reasons might be, they've brought you to a good place to get involved and to learn, and that's an opportunity right there. People think that because I'm rich and famous that I know everything. I know a lot, but one thing I know is that I don't know everything. So I ask myself this question every day. What can I learn today that I didn't know before? And you know what? I learn something new every single day. That's a big reason for my success, and the same thing can apply to you. Take the time to see today as an opportunity, and you'll be surprised by what can come your way. Be open to new ideas, and you will be creating your own opportunities before too long. Number six, know everything you can about what you're doing. That's a good way to cover your bases. Another good way is to read the book Robert Kiyosaki and I have written together, Why We Want You to Be Rich. It's about covering your bases and knowing what's going on. I remember when some guys came in to meet with me about a great idea they had for an atrium for a building on Wall Street. It was a beautiful idea except for one thing. None of them had thought about how the building would be supported around this fabulous atrium. They didn't take into account the steel columns that were necessary to support a 72-story building. A very big and embarrassing oversight that could have been avoided if they'd taken the time to think about what they were doing. Don't let that happen to you. Know what you're doing first. Number seven, be lucky. Remember the old saying, the harder I work, the luckier I get. Well, it happens to be true. It works for me, and I've encountered some pretty big successes. But this goes along with something that's absolutely necessary for great success. Be passionate. You have to love what you're doing if you want to be successful at it. My father told me that it's absolutely true. I might work 7 days a week, but it doesn't seem like work to me because I love what I'm doing. If you don't like what you're doing, find something else to do, or do it part-time until you can find something full-time. You will never be successful, happy, or healthy unless you're doing what you love to do. That's just the way it is. So give it some thought. In fact, give it a lot of thought. For example, if you're feeling frustrated, there are two ways to look at the situation. Frustration can mean that maybe you're expecting too much, or it can be an indication that you know you should be, or could be, doing more. Use frustration as a motivator. Use it to get where you want to go instead of staying where you don't want to be. But above all, be passionate. That's the fast track to success, no matter what your interests are. Number eight, see yourself as victorious. That can zap negativity immediately and put a positive spin on problems. I've gotten to the point where I see problems as challenges that I'll enjoy meeting and dealing with. My point here is that no matter what you do, you will encounter problems. Why not see them as challenges instead and know that you are more capable of dealing with them? That's positive thinking with a realistic slant. When I go into negotiations, I keep an open mind to what may happen. But I can tell you that there's already a done deal attitude on my part. I've already thought the process through to the extent that I know everything will be better off if they agree with what I've come up with, because I've taken both sides into account. I enter the situation with a victorious attitude, and I've had enough victories to know that this attitude works. Use it. Number 9, be smart. Know that you have something unique to offer because you do use the tools that are provided for you and remain open to new ideas. That's being smart. That's also where innovation comes from. Being smart means you know how to use what you've got. That doesn't mean there's nothing left to learn, but it means that you will have the ability to learn and move forward with success. And success is very important. Success is what you want. Just be successful. Believe me, you'll be happier. I know people who have had very few real advantages in life, and yet they've managed to become giant successes. They figured out how to use what they had, not to dwell on what they didn't have. I'm convinced that everyone has something useful to offer, and if you apply yourself diligently, you'll find that you have what it takes to succeed, and you're going to be a lot happier for it. Number 10, above all, never give up. Never, never, never give up. The only time you will be a failure is if you quit trying. Only losers quit. The biggest losers in the world are quitters. Winners keep on going. So whatever you do, never give up. My father always used to harp, never give up, son. Never give up. Don't ever quit. I never want to see you give up or quit. Well, my father was a smart guy, and I listened to him. And remember, think big. A good way to start is to read our new book, Why We Want You to Be Rich, Two Men, One Message. There's a lot of great advice in there for you, and I expect you to pay attention. You're going to do fantastically well. You're going to be a winner, and I'm going to see you in the winner's circle.
Okay, Morris, we're back. Eric Cole 402, you still with us? Okay, now, that's very, very interesting there. That's a fantastic concept, especially when we understand that the anything that the mind conceives of can achieve if only you believe it. Area code 972. What you think?
Wow. Brother Hawker, this is Sister Sharon Hunter, and wow is what I can say to that last segment. And I was thinking in particular to an online business that I've been trying to get off and running for a few months now. And I've also been thinking about letting it go because it ain't been working out for me. But after listening to him, I kind of realized I know I put a lot of work into it, but straight it because I don't see the returns on what I'm doing right away. I'm kind of impatient. I kind of want stuff to happen right away. Right now, when I do it, I expect to have it and get frustrated, but I'm going to follow Rule 10, and he said, don't quit. Never, ever quit. So I'm going to get back in there and focus. I need to focus a little bit more on what I'm doing. It's kind of hard to focus on that when you're in the workforce 8 to 10 hours a day, and then you have to come home and try to focus on your own self. But you got to be able to divide the time and work just as hard for your own business as you do for somebody else's business. So I'm going to try to stay focused and put a little bit more effort into what I'm doing.
Well, I'm absolutely in agreement with you because, see, that's where your plans and goals come into play. You have to stay focused on what you decided, because, see, some days we feel good. Some days we just as happy and excited, and, you know, it's a beautiful day outside. I feel good. I woke up feeling good. I had a good night rest, and today I just feel good. You know, I was blessed over here. I had a good conversation over here. Last night was good, and all of this, I feel good. So I'm going to, you know, I need to be in business for myself. I'm going to set this thing up and do it. I'm going to put this effort and this time into doing that. Okay, let's say we go out and we do that. And then we turn around. Another day may come. It may be raining, maybe dreary or whatever. And then we just get down into the situation. Well, I don't feel like doing nothing. I'm just going to relax. I'm not going to do this. I'm, you know, I'm just, and next thing you know, we done got away from the good day.
Right.
We done got so far away from the good day till we just done, next thing you know, then we done failed, and you might get a phone call from somebody telling you about everybody who died, and then you might get another phone call telling you about the relationship problems they had over here, or what other drama happened around this right here, and all this right here beats you down because it's already not a good day. You're trying to relax and, you know, and all this stuff. So we're going to deal with this aspect of what you're talking about, but I wanted to play that first because Donald Trump, that was Donald Trump, and he was telling us, you know, how he thinks. And
that was Donald Trump.
Yeah, that was him. Yeah,
oh,
that was him.
That's like him. I can't stand him.
Well, there's a lot of people who don't.
He ain't say nothing at that point to really piss me off. I just don't like him as a person.
There's a lot of them out there that are quite wealthy that we don't like, that are taking and using the principles governing wealth that we're not using. So,
right.
Whether we like them or not, we ain't got to.
Yeah,
we,
he still made. Right, he made
forget
some good points.
Part.
I'm going to listen at that part of it. I can kind of block out the part that don't like him and listen to the good advice. But I'm still not going to like him.
That's okay. You got to worry about being rich. We should never say that, well, I'm 65 years old now, and I'm poor as dirt, and the reason why I'm poor because I don't like Donald Trump.
Right.
That don't sound
right. Right. Now that would make no sense.
He doesn't know me. I don't know him. And I don't think he could care less without renting flow. He didn't want to know you.
I'm sure he does. He could care less whether how I feel about him. He laughing all the way to the bank.
There you go. So let's take a look at what we can gather to use, and what we have to understand is there are principles that govern poverty. There are things that people do that and think and say and act out to cause them to be impoverished, and there are things that they are not doing in acting and thinking and putting into practice that can make them wealthy and free. Because, see, if you're wealthy and free, then you can do something about the overall conditions of your people. Now, there are people that look like you and I who are wealthy and who are doing some things for people that look like you and I. We just don't know about them. We don't know everything about what they're doing. So we shouldn't be concerned about that. We should be concerned about what we're going to do once we become free to deal
okay.
with our people and help our people. Now, this may not be the goal of everybody. This is my goal. This is why I keep talking about it. You know, you might have some people who just want to get rich. I want to get rich. I want to move to the Cayman Islands. I want to live there. And then I'm going to go over to Jamaica and buy me a house over there and go over there. I'm just going to live between these two places. I'm not going to be concerned about America and what's going on and with them people over there. I'm just going to just live out the remainder of my days and just be rich, and this is all I want to do. I don't want to do nothing else. You got people are like that. Okay, but this is their choice. This is what they want to do. We all have choices in life. We have to come to the conclusion about what we want to do. What is our choice about what we want to do? Okay, now, open up my brother line and see if he's still here again. Air code 402, you still with us? 402?
Yes, I am.
I think. Oh, you are? Okay, well, hold on a minute. I'm going to bring it back in. What do you think about this?
I think everything that you said was right. I think she's right. I think that that is a solution. I think that we need to look at our finances and our assets and our assets and our debts and take and like you said, pay ourselves first.
Yeah. You got to pay yourself first. That's just bottom line. The second thing is we got to always pay ourselves first, and we have to, number two, we got to concentrate on going from asset to investment. Okay, see, now, let's say we start paying ourselves first. Okay, if you, out of all the money you make, you got this new thing you're doing, you got $100, you're going to take $10 out, you're going to just put it to the side to you. Put it in the bank, put it somewhere. Because what we're going to do is when we accumulate enough, we're going to take that and we're going to invest something that can generate some income for us. See, if I'm working on a job and I'm making $500 a week, so out of that $500, let's say that's 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, that's $50 a week. If I'm doing 10%, that's $50 a week that I'm going to put to the side as seed capital for investment. Because what I'm going to do is I'm going to put myself in a position where I'm not dependent on the job for $500 a week. I'm going to take that money by following the principle of paying myself first, get me up $1,000 to $2, and then I'm going to invest in something that's generating some extra income. In other words, I'm not going to have to be physically out there doing something. That money that I put to work is going to work for me and generate something to come in. And if I keep this thing going long enough, the next thing you know, you discover that you got more money by putting your money to work than the job paying you. So if that's the case, then we start thinking, wait a minute. I'm investing 40 hours a week and more, making somebody else rich. But over here, I'm making $1,500 a week by investing in this investment that I got. Why am I continuing to stay stuck on stupid? Why don't I get up out of here and start duplicating and taking that money, because all the profits that I'm making out of the money that's working for me, I'm following the same principle. I'm breaking myself off out of that. If every $1,000 I make, that's $300 that go into asset section. So now we are finding ourselves in the position of going from asset to income. You know, throw up that little corporation, start bleeding off expenses, everything we buy through it, that corporation. Break yourself off, you start investing in other, making other investments. You can start dealing with your tax write-offs. You can start dealing with spending as much money as you can and everything that you want if you follow the principles of wealth. Put that system together for you. And just remember, if you're working, if you get any money from anywhere, the first person to get paid is you. That's the principle. That's the trick. And see, this is stuff what a lot of people are simply not doing. Now, what we're going to do now is I'm going to deal with my favorite millionaire. This is my boy. I like him. The reason I like this guy is because he said something very, very important to me. And I heard what he said, and ever since then, I've been checking him out. I like this guy. He's from Hawaii, and he made a statement. He said, I wasn't supposed to tell you this. All of my friends and rich buddies and all this told me I wasn't supposed to tell you this. But it was important, and I thought you need to know. And here we go. I'm going to show you about this. And this is something that I didn't know. I actually didn't know. But now, he's not going to do that segment, but what he's going to do is he's going to bring us up to speed on some things that we need to consider involving wealth and being in business. So I wanted to put it on for us.
Welcome to the business of the 21st century. Investor, entrepreneur, educator, and best-selling author Robert Kiyosaki is here to share with you his timeless principles for building wealth and creating a happy life. His message for you is that there is a business out there with a business model that anyone can use to become successful, no matter what your circumstances or experience level. Robert has written over 15 books on finance and personal development, which have combined to sell over 28 million copies. His book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, has been on the New York Times bestsellers list for over 8 years. First, Robert will share with you the business principles that have made him a multimillionaire. And then he will go into detail about the business that can change your life, the business of the 21st century.
Hello, I'm Robert Kiyosaki, and thank you for listening. I'm here today to tell you that even though we are in tough times, you can still be a success. In fact, it's during tough times that many people get ahead financially. In fact, I'm looking forward to these tough times. There are many reasons for this economic crisis we are in today, and it is the biggest financial crisis in the history of the world. In my opinion, it is greater than the Great Depression, which began in 1929. One of the many reasons for the crisis is for the first time, you're now competing for a job with somebody who works in China, India, or the Philippines, or Eastern Europe. And for Americans, this means that you can no longer make $80 an hour, because there's people in countries all over the world who are willing to work for a dollar an hour. How do you compete with that? Today, with the information age, I can now hire accountants and attorneys in India who speak great English and who understand our laws extremely well. Why would I pay somebody $500 an hour, an accountant or attorney, when I can hire somebody in India for $25 an hour? So this is one of the big reasons the idea of a safe, secure job for life is really an obsolete idea. You couple that with technology, and today I can replace people with technology. Why would I pay somebody more money when I can replace them with a computer? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Today, companies are not just downsizing. They're just letting thousands of people go. Unemployment is rampant. The tragedy is we have many bright students leaving school, let's say age 24 to 35, just loaded down with debt from college loans, and they can't even find a job. So the big problem today is in a global society and industrial age world, the idea of a safe, secure, high-paying job for life is an obsolete idea. So for those of you who may not be familiar with Rich Dad, Poor Dad, a book that has now sold over 25 million copies worldwide. It is the number one personal finance book in all history, and has been on the New York Times bestseller list for over 8 years. Rich Dad, Poor Dad is a true story of my two dads. As I said, my real dad was the head of education for the state of Hawaii, a PhD. Great father, great dad. But he's the one who always said to me, go to school and get a job, work hard, save money, get out of debt. And my rich dad said to me, who was my best friend's father, who started teaching me starting at the age of 9, he says, if you're going to be rich, don't get a job, don't save money, and don't get out of debt. You have to learn to use money and be an entrepreneur. So Rich Dad, Poor Dad is a very simple story about two fathers tell their sons, one rich, one poor, about how to manage their lives and take control of their future. And thank God in 1974, I listened to my rich dad. Rich Dad, Poor Dad was book one in the Rich Dad series of books, and there's a number of books today. But book number two is the most important book for people looking to make changes in your life. So if you're looking to make changes, a change of mindset, a change of how you look at the world, it is book number two, and book number two is entitled The Cash Flow Quadrant. And the cash flow quadrant is very simple. Think of making a cross in the middle of a piece of paper. On the left-hand upper corner, put an E. The lower left corner, put an S. Upper right, put a B, and the lower right, put an I. E stands for employee. So that's why my poor dad always said, go to school so you can get a job, because my poor dad wanted me to become an employee. S stands for small business, specialist, or solo. So a lot of times, many small business people are S, and or they're specialists like a doctor or a lawyer. My mom wanted me to become a doctor, and she says, you know, son, why don't you become a doctor? In other words, become an S. And I said, there's only one problem, Mom. She says, what's that? S's are smart people. Now, for some of you know, I didn't do that well in school, even though my dad was a head of education. So my mom says, you're right. You shouldn't be a doctor because you'll never do well in school. So I didn't become an S. See, S's believe they have to do everything on their own. When you listen to a guest, they'll always say the same words. If you want it done right, do it by yourself. So a lot of times they're just loners. And you look at different sports, like golf is a pretty lonely sport. You play it by yourself. On the B and the I side, B stands for big business, 500 employees or more, or 10 million or more in income, gross income. So very few people make the B quadrant. By starting your own business in the network marketing industry, you have a chance to move from the E and the S, from employee to self-employed or small business or specialist, to the big business side, which is to be a business owner, and where you have a lot of people working with you and for you. Your job is to spread the wealth to as many people as possible. Now, this is where the I fits in. I invest a lot in real estate. I have gold and silver companies. I have oil, and I have my book businesses. I have lots of businesses. But I invest my money in the I quadrant, and the problem with most people is they don't have enough money to invest. That's the problem. So, well, how can I invest? I don't have any money. Well, the reason you don't have any money on the E and the S side, the taxes are so high, you can't get ahead. You know, I pay less taxes than most of my employees, percentage-wise. I make millions of dollars, but I'll pay down to around 15% tax. Most employees, they're lucky. The more money they make, the higher they pay in taxes. So those are the big differences between the B, ES, B, and the I. Many E's and S's cannot invest simply because they're out of money. The government sucks their money out through taxes, through debt. You know, buy a house, it's your biggest investment, which is not. And number two is you put your money into, you know, a pension plan, you know, and all this stuff. So your money is going to the mutual fund companies, and then inflation kills you. You look at oil and gas and all that, they just keep going up. So a guy like me is making fortunes because I invest directly in oil wells and gold companies and silver and stuff like this. So as inflation hits, I make more money. So the B and the I side, the tax laws are different. I can make a lot more money on the B and I side than the E's and S's can make. So that's the power of the cash flow quadrant. By reading that book, you'll see that the E's, S, B's, and I's all have different mindsets. The tax laws are different, and your friends are different. So that's why the cash flow quadrant is an essential book for anybody looking to make changes in their lives. You know, they estimate that 80% of the people are on the E and the S side. I actually think it's higher, like 95%, but for safety factor, let's call it 80%. The first thing you have to shift is your mindset. And then, you know, people say to me, well, it's tough being an entrepreneur, or entrepreneurs are born, not made. That's not true. The trick is, how do you change your mindset, and how do you get the set of skills that allow you to transition from employee or small business, self-employed, to big business and investor? Out of all the business models I've discovered, one stood out from the rest. It requires little upfront money, very low overhead, and can be worked part-time and can generate you the income part-time so that you can transition out of your full-time job. And this great business opportunity is a thing called network marketing. The thing about entrepreneurs is they make things happen. They take control of their lives. They don't let other people's small minds stop them. And the beauty of a network marketing business, the reason I recommend it, is for you to be supported by an organization, to go through your fears, to change your friends, to not care what other people say or think about you. If you can do that, I mean, if you can handle what pointy-headed little intellectuals say to you about this business, then you shall grow up to become a great entrepreneur. But as long as you care so much about what other people think of you, you'll probably never be successful in life, no matter what you do. Because as you know, this world is not an easy place. It's not fair. In fact, sometimes it's really, really cruel, because if you're poor, they step on you. If you're not successful, they step on you. If you don't have confidence, they step on you. So it's up to you to gain that confidence, the skill set, the mindset, the guts, the determination to not care what other people say about you, because 95% of them are broke anyway. So let me share with you my reasons for recommending network marketing. First of all, I've never done it. And I had a closed mind to it. You know, I thought it was terrible. I was invited to several of these events, and I sat there and I said, why should I do that? Well, the reason I said, why should I do that, is because I knew how to start a business on my own anyway. That's what I had a rich dad for. But it was a friend of mine in Texas who opened my mind up to network marketing. And here he was, a rich, rich, rich guy, and he was starting a network marketing business. I said, Bill, why are you doing that? you don't need the money. He says, that's correct. But I need to give back. I need to train other people. And more importantly, I need investors from my other businesses. So he said one of the problems he had when he talked to people about investing in his real estate company, most people didn't have any money. So he says, well, if I can help solve their problem of not having enough passive income, maybe they'll invest in my real estate businesses. And so I went, my God, you know, it really is about people helping people. That's all he was doing. It was not about being greedy or trying to sell something. It was just trying to help your fellow human being. And that's when my mind started to shift. And I realized that most people will never make the transition from the E and the S side to the right side, the B and the I side. And that's all he was doing. He was helping people make the transition from employee or self-employed or small business to big business and the investor side. And with that, I changed my mind. And that's when I started looking into network marketing with open eyes, with refreshed point of view. I had to let go of my closed-minded ideas of what I had heard. And what I found, because I went to some of these conventions and I signed up and I went to look at things, I found out they're fabulous organizations. Now, let me warn you, there's good and bad in everything. There were good leaders and bad leaders. But what I was really impressed with in most of the companies and most of the leaders was a sincere desire to help their fellow human being grow, to become bigger than they really are, to gain the confidence, to gain the skills necessary to someday become a great entrepreneur. And that's what I saw. I saw network marketing as a great personal development type of business. And that's why I saw it, as my new book title says, The Business for the 21st Century. It is about developing people, not pushing them down. It's about building them up so they can take better control of their lives and their future without worried about being fired all the time or will I be downsized or what if the economy changed. Network marketing business, the business of the 21st century, is about turning people from employees to entrepreneurs. That's what I support. So although I've never belonged to a network marketing business, I do support. The Rich Dad Company supports individuals shifting from employee or self-employed to the big business, entrepreneur, and investor side. So that's why I support network marketing. It's a fabulous way to grow and help other people to grow and realize their full potential in life. So what is network marketing? The concept is simple. Today, companies spend millions and billions of dollars advertising. So what network marketing does, instead of spending all of that money on television, radio, print, and the web, they pass that money on to you. So network marketing is very simply the best form of marketing is word of mouth, viral marketing, friends helping friends type of marketing. And so that's where the profits are generated from. Rather than giving it to the big ad agencies or the media companies, you pass it on to yourselves and your friends. That's the concept of network marketing. Network marketing is not so much about selling. It's about building a network of people. It's about building an asset for you and your family. So an important value of network marketing, it's real-world business education. Now, I'm fortunate enough to be invited to many colleges and universities and speak to entrepreneurs. The problem with them is they're not really prepared for the real world. Most of them will still leave school and hope to find a job. The beauty of network marketing, moving from the E and the S side to the right side of the quadrant, first of all, requires a change in mindset. That mindset is exactly opposite of E's and S's. And that's the tough part. Once you see, oh my God, I don't need a steady paycheck, I don't need to work hard for myself, then your mind starts to shift. Then it requires learning new skills. It's not necessarily easy. Some people it's easier than others. But you have to learn to have money and people work for you rather than you work for money and other people. And that's a very different mindset. It means you have to become a leader. It's also called business education. A network marketing business is a great way to get real-world business education. I would listen to the person who shared this audio with you and then go with this person to a meeting. You know, you have to ask, are these people really concerned about me and my welfare? See, corporate America, or most big corporations, are not interested in you. They're interested in making money for their shareholders, not employees. So you have to ask yourself, are the leaders really concerned about me? And in most cases, I think you'll find the answer is yes. You see, in network marketing, your leader cannot be successful unless you're successful, which is completely opposite of corporate America. In corporate America, when I worked for Xerox, if I didn't perform, I was fired. I mean, I came close to being fired for 2 to 3 years. I was always on the bottom. And they would have fired me. But the beauty of network marketing is they want to pull you up. As long as you're willing to show up and go through their training programs, they'll work with you. They won't fire you. They'll give you time to develop and to become the person you are. And then after you're successful, then your job is to assist other people to do the same thing. You cannot be successful unless you help other people. It's a fabulous form of business. It is a humane way of doing business. It's really about meeting people heart to heart, soul to soul, business to business. Let's help each other out. And that's one of the beauties of network marketing. It's real world, but it's people helping people become the best they are. When I came back from Vietnam, again, my poor dad said go back to school. And for some reason, it didn't feel right to me. It wasn't what my gut was telling me to do. So instead, I went to do personal development type of work. And I found personal development is much more fulfilling, much more rewarding, but it means me getting out of my mind. It means me doing my best to become bigger than my situation. See, most people are crushed by the environment, especially in this crisis. They lose their job, they're out of money and all this, and the world crushes them. Personal development means you have to become bigger than your problems. If you're in debt, you have to become bigger than your debt. If you don't become bigger than your debt, you'll never solve the problem. If you're only making, let's say, $50,000 a year, then you have to get bigger than $50,000 a year. And that's what personal development is. In traditional corporations, they always say, well, you should live below your means. You know, be happy to have a job. You know, next year we might give you a 2% pay raise, but only if you do as I tell you. That's not about personal development. That's called personal slavery. You become a slave to the corporation. If that's what you want to do, stay there. Have a good life. It's not my life. I needed to become bigger than my problems. When I started my first business back in 1978, I made a lot of money. It was a nylon and Velcro surfer wallet business, and I was soon a millionaire, but I lost all my money, and I found myself nearly $1 million in debt. And what my rich dad said to me is, congratulations, you just failed. And most successful entrepreneurs will fail 3, 4, 5 times. They'll lose that many businesses. But each time you'll get smarter. So your first job is to figure out how to pay back that $1 million, you know? So I never declared bankruptcy. I just had to get smarter and bigger than $1 million. And that was the best training program I ever had. I had to rebuild my business and pay people back. You see, if I got a job, there's no way I could have paid back $1 million, not making $100,000 a year. There's no way. Taxes would have killed me. So, again, it was personal development. Now that I got bigger than $1 million, that was great. And now it's on to hundreds of millions of dollars. So personal development is simply you getting bigger than your problems. The only problem is you get bigger problems. And today it becomes a challenge of how big my problems are, because then I can solve them. Most people give in to their problems. They get smaller than their problems, and that's when life stops for them. So one of the primary reasons I recommend network marketing, because it's a personal development program. You know, you don't join and hope to become rich next week. If you join a network marketing company, I strongly recommend you say, I'm going to give it a 5-year commitment. I'm going to give it a full shot for at least 5 years. Because whether it's network marketing or baseball or football or whatever it is, quitters never win. And most people, when the going gets tough or the problems seem insurmountable, they quit. And that's why they'll never be successful in life. So network marketing is very much a support group of people who want the best for you. But you have to give your best also. And so that's why I say consider it a 5-year commitment that you'll do your best for 5 years. I can almost assure you that if you do and you give it your best for 5 years, you'll be a completely different human being at the end of the period. Number two is it's scalable. You know, I mean, if you join a network marketing company, you're not stuck to your little hometown. In most cases, you have a worldwide opportunity to spread all over the world your business. It's scalable to as big as you are. If you're small, it'll stay small. If you get big, it'll grow bigger. And number three, the most important thing as far as business skills go is you have to be a great leader. You look at the world today, we lack great leaders. You know, people just want to say what they people want to hear. They'll tell you anything to get elected. So the great thing about network marketing is not only learn great sales skills, you learn great leadership skills. face it, if you're not a great leader, you won't be successful in anything. So the most important thing that network marketing teaches you about leadership is to be a great leader. You better practice what you preach. You better, you know, be a role model, an example for other people to follow. If you lack courage, people won't follow you. So the great thing about network marketing is you develop your leadership skills, and entrepreneurs are great leaders. See, there's four basic people in the world. There are people who must be right. They want to have all the right answers, and they know everything. And those people rarely change. People who must be right are some of the most pig-headed, narrow-minded, righteous individuals. But you have to have them as attorneys and accountants, you know. Number two are people who must be comfortable. Their house could be burning down, but they'll sit on the sofa, you know, looking at the TV channels, watching for the next football game. The next three is a person who must be liked. A person who must be liked will probably never be successful in the network marketing business, because if your survival is dependent upon somebody liking you, you'll probably never be anything, because you want to approve and make other people happy. And the fourth person is a person who must win. And I love winning. You know, to me, that's the joy of life, setting big dreams, big goals, and going for it. Even if it may take 2 or 3 years or 4 years to get there, I like the idea of winning. And winners like winners, and that's why the network marketing business is so good for people who love to win. That's who it's for. A great benefit of network marketing is genuine wealth creation. You see, E's and S's, they work hard, but they don't create any assets. You know, if you're self-employed, you may have a business, but it's not really an asset. That's the problem, because if you stop working, the asset dies on you. It doesn't work anymore. So B's and I's, the difference between them is they're creating real assets. For example, my rich dad company is an asset. Whether I work or not, $2 million a month comes in. It's not a bad business, you know, and for the rest of my life. I love real estate because as long as my tenants are paying me rent, that money keeps coming in. And I like my oil wells very simply because every month I'm selling oil. You know, that's a real asset. So that's the mindset difference between E's and S's, B's and I's. E's and S's work for money. B's and I's build assets, and assets are real wealth. So your network marketing business is a real asset. Your network is your asset. Another word on the difference between wealth and money. Wealth is not measured in money. Like, it's not how rich are you. Wealth is measured in time. For example, if I have $1,000 in savings and my expenses are $1,000 a month, then my wealth is 1 month. If I have $12,000 in savings and my expenses are $1,000 a month, my wealth is measured in 12 months. But by building a business, a network marketing business, that wealth becomes infinite, because if it's really a well-built business, that wealth will come in as long as you live. And that's real wealth. A mistake many people make when picking a network marketing business is they look at the product. And products are important, don't get me wrong. But you really need to look at who your leaders are. You know, how good is their training program? Do they have your best interests at heart? Will they assist you in coming out of your shell, not being afraid of rejection, not caring what other people think of you? That's the most important thing. And then go on to become a great leader and build a network. That's more important than a product or a compensation plan. And once you find that great leader and that great business, that's where you find home. Look into the company. Are they willing to train you? You know, stop looking at the product and look at the leaders. Look at the training, and that's when you'll find the right business for you. So what does it take? It doesn't take a higher education. Like my poor dad wanted me to get my master's and my PhD. I'd be poor like him if I did that. After all, PhD stands for poor, helpless, and desperate. And that's what happens to people when they become PhDs. I have one, by the way. You don't have to be great in sales, because the company will train you. It's not about selling, it's about becoming a great leader, a person that inspires other people to be great. And you don't need to quit your job, you can start part-time. It does take going beyond your comfort zone, being willing to learn, study. You've got to persevere, and most important, have a great attitude. It also takes time. It's not a get-rich-quick business, it's about building an asset. Give it at least 5 years. You know, there's a book called Outliers. They say it takes at least 10,000 hours to become successful in anything. Most people are quitters. That's why they're not successful. And it all comes down to action. you know, analysis paralysis. That's why so many smart people never become successful, because they sit there and they analyze something and they never take any action. Look, one of the best things I learned from Vietnam, don't think, act. So the people who win are the people who take action. And now it's time to take action. So is it time for you to make changes in your life? Is it time for you to take control of your future? Is it time to join a business of the 21st century? Remember why you want to make money and be rich, so you can live a magnificent life. It's not just about money. You want to have peace of mind and love what you do and be surrounded by people who are just like you. I like network marketing so much because it is an equal opportunity business. It's not about education. It's not about race. Not about age or gender. It really is like a level playing field, but it really isn't, because it's up to you. If you have more determination, more drive, more discipline, you'll win over people who don't. Network marketing is the business model of the future. It's set up to make it possible for anyone to win. It's a business for the new era, after the industrial age. It is the information age, after all. These businesses are going to explode in the future, especially as unemployment increases and wages come down. Most importantly, it's a path to personal success. It's about personal development. It's about becoming bigger than your problems. It's about bringing out the greatness that lies inside of you. It's about creating financial freedom through a process that helps other human beings. And that's revolutionary. So the person that handed you this audio is also a leader. They see the leader in you. They want you to become the best you can be. You see, the economy is not the issue. The issue is you and what you're going to do after listening to this audio tape.
This concludes The Business of the 21st Century. Thank you for joining us.
Freeing up capital to make investments may not be as hard as you think. For those of you who have Facebook accounts, send me a friend request over there on Facebook and LinkedIn to Tahaka Amana Elbe. That's T-A-R-H-A-K-A. Amana is A-M-A-A-N-A and then E-L and, of course, B-E-Y. And you'll be able to see the actual documents clearly showing you how I was able to cancel my mortgage and property taxes contracts, and that way I have freed up capital for investments. To get the apparatus to do this with, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. It's not as hard as you think. Send a friend request on Facebook, and I'll grant that request, and you can actually see the documents for yourself. Peace.
Okay, Moses, we back. Now I'm going to open up my lines again. And Sister Hunter, are you still there? Area code 972.
Yes, I'm here.
All right, what'd you think about that?
Again, a very interesting piece of information that he gave out, and he hinted on some of the same things that Donald Trump had hinted on about not quitting and not being a loser. But I liked his scenario where he said kept referring to his poor dad as the one who kept wanting him to get more, go to school, do this. And so his dad had died pure because of that same belief. And actually, I was raised in the same type of environment. My grandparents raised me, and they didn't have very much education at all. I think my grandma might have went to the third grade, and my granddaddy might have went to maybe the fourth grade or something like that, but not very much at all. So they wanted all of us to go and get you a good education, and you can get you a good job. I don't know why they led us down that path when neither one of them took that path, and they were very successful. They were actually entrepreneurs. They had their own business and things of that nature. So why did they steer us around that path? I don't know, but we bit, and that's the role each one of us taking. And I got to say, out of all the education that I've acquired, I felt like the smartest, dumbest person in the world.
Well, let me ask you this now. Okay, now you said they were both entrepreneurs, and they,
right.
That means they own their own business and all this stuff. Do
right.
you think that they were wise enough to know that if you, in the future, if you had that education, at the same time, you will never forget where you came from.
I hadn't thought about it like that, but yeah, that could have been something like that. That's a good explanation. I've never thought of that.
All right, the way I look at it, because we have people have a bad habit of thinking that because we live in this day and age, even though we are not wealthy, our parents and our ancient ancestors, they were not rich in stuff, but they lived. They lived a long time. They had life, but we, some kind of way, we feel like, well, they didn't guide us right. But it has never occurred to us that my grandmother and my grandfather lived, and my great-great-grandmama and great-great-granddaddy lived all the way up in their hundreds of years, they have hundreds of years of experience of being on this rock.
Right.
And they put us directly in the path of what it's going to take for us to be the future. They're not worried about you forgetting them. Because you didn't spend a large portion of your life with them in your memory. But
right.
Now when you're faced with the future and they're telling you to go to school, get a good education, and so you get a good job and all the right, you're going to get the skills and the technical skills of the 21st century that you're going to be able to take and use in your business and use the principles that govern their lives and to get back to the good old times that you have. And I think that we should never think for one second that what they encourage us to do was something wrong. Because if they lived as long as they lived on this hill rock and had the experience that they have, regardless of what they told us to do, as far as the future that they tried to fathom and imagine, I think that they are preparing you to have a good life in this future.
Okay.
Now, the first thing you told me is that they were entrepreneurs and own their own business. That's the first thing you told me. Why you didn't tell me that you had forgot that?
I never forget that, because I watched them, and I watched how successful they were. That was instilled in me, I guess, while they was telling me about the education. I was learning the lesson that they was teaching by living the life that they did. So that's one thing that I learned by watching and observing them.
Okay, well now let's do it in reverse. In your opinion, back then, do you think that we could take an iPod and give it to your grandmother and grandfather and put it in their hand and tell them we need you to operate this within the next hour or two, or a day or two or three days? Do you think they could have done that successfully?
No way. No way.
Okay.
They wouldn't have
right,
known
so
what to do with no computer, no electronic things like that.
All right, well, let's hold it right there. So you're telling me that your grandmother and your grandfather were entrepreneurs, had their own business, and were successful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, compared to the next-door neighbors on both sides, which one were more successful than them, in your opinion?
My grandparents were, because the neighbors on both sides of us, they worked themselves into an early grave, both of them. They just worked themselves to death.
Okay. So what your grandmother and grandfather told you to go to school, get a good education, why do you think they told you that?
I guess they wanted me to have a a strong, I guess, a foundation. I don't know. Maybe they just wanted the foundation of my education to be strong enough so that I would be able to branch out on my own and do what I needed to do for me, I guess. That's the only thing I could think of. And it was important to them because they didn't have it. They never had an education. That's what they used to always tell us, that they never had the opportunity because the times was different when they was little boys and little girls as when we were. Even when we came up like in the 60s and the 70s, see, the times was just different. They said they never even had the opportunity to get an education. And so if the opportunity was provided to us, then they wanted us to take advantage of that.
Okay. All right. Do you think they was worried about you forgetting about what you had experienced with them?
Oh, no. That was just breathing into me. And so they knew, and I know that that's something that I'll never forget.
All right. Well, in my opinion, I think because I pretty much came from the same environment, and all I know is my people grow their own food. They had their own water. They didn't go to town for nothing. It was self-sustaining. And they always told me to go to school, get a good education, and get you a good job and stuff like that. But you see, a duck ain't gonna a chip off the old block ain't gonna fly for.
Right.
So when no matter what happens with that education and all right now, you know how to go back to that old time religion and survive, don't you think?
Right. Oh, definitely. They definitely taught us how to survive.
Okay. All right. Okay. I think we got it now. Erico 42, you still with us?
Yes, I am.
All right. What you think about this thing, man?
I was thinking. I'm glad you brought the whole education and why. The elder, her elders, said get a good education and that nature is because they didn't have the opportunity to read, and that's where the changes start to apply at when you start to read law. And everything like that. That's kind of why we are in the situation that we are, because we weren't able to read, and it was against the law for us to read, actually, and that put us into a backseat position. Whereas, you know, Martin Luther King, he taught us everything about the Bible. When it came down to law, it was a whole different thing. And when we start to study law and learn the law, that's when we can play the game and know the rules to the game.
Okay, well.
Do you agree, Tahaka?
Yeah, I do agree. Because the art of law was taken out of the school system. The art of wealth was taken out of the school system. They did not teach us about money. They didn't teach us about law. And so in our current position here inside the United States, it's very, very important for us to understand law and commerce. And what I do is, because I get a lot of calls from people across the United States asking me questions about law and commerce, and I try to give them the same basic principles and the same basic motorist apparendi, so to speak, of how to deal with this situation. First of all, you cannot play checkers if you don't know the rules of the game. You can't play chess if you don't know the rules of the game. If you master the rules of the game, then you can be successful. You can win. And see, So we have a very, very unique situation inside the United States involving commerce and law. And when it comes to business, you're going to have to understand business, and you need to, if you, because see, we, what I don't want people to do is to totally focus on business and just say, well, look, I hire somebody to deal with the law thing. What if you learn about law and master business? Oh, y'all hold on a minute. We got a new caller in here. Area code 215. Could you tell us who you are and what's your question or comment? 215.
Yeah, my name is Dre.
Hey, Dre. Let me have it, man.
Yeah, how you doing? Yeah, I've been listening. I want to ask you about, like, the moderate and aggressive growth if you're dealing with the 401. Is trying to be too aggressive, is that the fast way to lose the money, or be concerned?
I can hardly hear you, but you have to speak up. Speak up to me. And you're asking me about what are you asking me about that we're dealing with here now?
Yeah, I want to ask you about moderate and aggressive growth when you're dealing with the markets. Which is best, being aggressive or being moderate when you say trying to save?
When you're trying to save?
I'm talking about, like, you're investing in money, like 401 or some kind of investment, you know, to be aggressive in the market, like, you know, taking risks with your money.
Okay, so you're talking about the stock market.
Yeah.
Okay, and you want to know whether you should be aggressive or moderate.
Right.
Okay, well, my answer to that right there is people who have the principles of wealth down have a complete list of what they should be thinking. When it comes to investors, an investor is never worried about losing money in the market because he's an investor. An investor has the principle and mindset to understand that money, or what we're calling money, or what we're using for money, which is fiat, and that's what's part of the game. These are the tokens in Monopoly that we're using. We concentrate on investing in what's producing. So if I had give you a direct answer to your question, if I let's say I'm investing in commodities, I'm investing in calls, puts and calls on the market. All right, that's one invested one situation that I'm investing in. I might have some high end investments on the market. However,
right.
On the other side of the coin, because I am an investor, I have a large segment of real estate holdings. I have a large segment of 401k holdings. I have a large segment of investing in rare coins and gold. I have a large segment of investments in silver. So now, and all of these investments are producing income. So there will be no position for me to be concerned about any losses that I would get. I wouldn't have to put myself in a position to be thinking about being moderate or aggressive or whatever, because I am an investor. I'm following the principles of investment. Let's say, for instance, like I make $45,000 on our calls. I might earn $15,000 on puts. I might lose $75,000 on high-risk investments. Why should I be upset about anything? Because I made $175,000 on red gold coins. I made another $150,000 on real estate. My 401k, it just kicked me $500,000. So, you know, one thing I look at, well, we lost $15,000 on this high-risk investments. Okay, all right, well, let's go on to something else. It rolled off my back like water off the back of a duck. See, we don't get stuck like Chuck. See, what we're talking about here and what we're trying to teach people here is the basic rudiments of wealth and understanding the principles of wealth and investments. See, if you are an employee, you want to be an employee slash investor. If you are a small business owner, you want to be a small business owner slash investor. If you are a big business owner, you want to be a big business owner slash investor. You understand? We're talking about going from assets to income.
Right. And what's the best way to do that?
If you come in late, the best way to do that is follow the principles that govern wealth. The first thing you do with any money that you get in, and this principle runs throughout your entirety of what you're doing until the day you die, when you're involved in the commerce game. The first step one is to pay yourself.
Right,
okay. Break it all the way down to the lowest denominator. Let's say you working on a job, you're only making $200 a week. All right. And so we set up a principle where we say out of every $100 I make, I'm going to take $10 away from that $100. I'm going to pay myself and we'll put that down in the income section. I got a sheet of paper. At the top of that sheet of paper, I got the word income. Underneath that, I got the word expense. Underneath that, I got the word asset. Underneath that, I got the word liability. So I'm going to list my liabilities. If I got a car and a house, I'm going to put that down there as a liability. I'm going to write it in the house, car. All right. Now, when I get them $200, I'm going to write the amount $200 up top in the income section. At the expenses, I ain't bought nothing, so therefore I'm going to write $20. Because we're taking $10 out of every $100 we got. We got $200 at the top in the income section. I'm going to write $20 down in the asset section. And I'm going to keep on doing that until I accumulate, because I'm developing the principle of paying myself first. I'm going to put that down there, and when I get enough, I'm going to take that and put it in an income-producing asset situation. Now,
so the asset and the money off the top for yourself are the same thing, right?
No. The income comes in.
The asset,
think about
the
this,
asset.
Now, you
go ahead.
You got liabilities. You got rent. You got a car. They list as liabilities. So that you're dependent on the income to take care of your livelihood. But we're going to break ourselves off a piece of that and pay ourselves first. That's the principle. We're going to take $20 and put in the asset section every week.
And what's the asset?
We're not going to touch that.
What's the asset?
We got $20 the first week in March. First week in February, we put $20 in there. All right. The second week in February, we put 20 more.
Okay.
Third week, we put 20 more.
I'm asking a question. What is the asset? Is that your savings too? You got two savings?
Now, we ain't thinking about, we forget about the word savings. Get rid of the word savings.
Right.
Get rid of that. What we're finna do is we're finna put ourselves in a position to put our pesos to work for us by paying ourselves first on that principle. Hold on one second.
Go ahead.
Area code 216.
Hey, what's going on, Target?
Hey, man, come on in.
Okay, I think we should you should probably put it out there like we have to to practice this principle. It's going to take discipline first and foremost. And the brother kept asking, what's the asset? You know, the asset is yourself. You're the primary asset because you're the one that's going to bring in this income. So, you know, you are the primary asset. And then everything you accumulate after that, and then you put that in motion, you know, after you, you know, you get this discipline down and to even practice this system. So I think, you know what I'm saying, it need to be put out there like, man, you know, this is like, you know, like how some people go on diets, extreme diets, where they, you know, just really make their mind up and do this, because this ain't something that you know what I'm saying, you just going to automatically do, because we got so many bad habits of, like, spending, you know what I'm saying, because, like, more so with black people, you know, we're the brokest black people of African descent inside the United States. Is the brokest people on the planet, but spend the most money. So, you know, we have to practice, first and foremost, extreme discipline when we put forth these principles.
I have to agree with you 100%. Yo, hold on a second. Erico 972.
Yes, I'm here.
All right, now, sister, you called me earlier in the day. We spoke earlier in the day.
Mm-hmm.
You told you be inside my wealth building classes, and you told me about your son, about
right.
Pay yourself thing. Could you tell us, re-explain that to us tonight? Tell me what happened. Tell me about what you and him had a conversation about.
Well, my youngest son, he's really into music, and he wants to open up his own studio. That's his dream of doing that. But to prepare, to do that, it takes capital and money. So he works his job, and I told him, no matter what you make out of every one of your checks, take 10% of what it is and set it aside in a savings account or something for you, and you can use that money as your foundation for starting your business and doing that. And he's been doing that ever since he's been working. He's been working maybe about, I would say, maybe close to about a year now, because he's just fresh out of high school. He just graduated high school last year. But he has managed to, by just putting 10% of his income away, I think he told me he saved over $700 or something like that, just by doing 10% of every one of his checks. And he's still managing to pay his own bills and things of that nature, too. So it's working out for my parents. He's just 19.
Okay. All right. Well, hold that out. We're going to open up the phone line one more time. Okay, now, area code 215.
It's 216.
216. Come on, man. What you saying?
Well, you know, I got to agree with that wholeheartedly. But again, you know, just reiterating, you know, it takes discipline. Just like the one who was speaking about her son. See, he was practicing that discipline before he was even attempting to do that process. You know, it takes that to even get that done. So we just got to understand that as well, you know. So, you know, with that being said, man, you know, I just think, you know, that just needs to be out there. Like, that just takes discipline. You got to discipline yourself into doing it. It's like tightening your belt, you know what I'm saying, and practicing bookkeeping. You know, you tell us that all the time. This is about bookkeeping as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct, and I got everybody phone lines open up. Eric Cole 402. What you think about the pay yourself first thing?
You gotta pay yourself. Yeah, you gotta pay yourself first.
Yeah, definitely.
If you don't pay yourself first, then you ain't gonna. Then you don't have anything to look forward to. You're just gonna be somebody that's in debt all the time, everywhere. all the time, any place, you know, there's no assets to you.
Right.
There's no investments to you. So what I would say, another thing is I would suggest maybe if that guy, if her son is interested in going into music, maybe going to Full Sail College, and while he's saving up his money, he can also craft his or hone his talents and go from there and be an independent investor slash assetter.
Okay, that's a good idea. And I think he's checked out those opportunities too, because Full Sail was one of the places that he looked at, and he's I think they're a private institution, and their tuition, I think, wasn't working out too well for him, and he wasn't able to get a lot of funding from the government because they're a private university. So, but he's found this other spot at a local university that offers a audio engineering program that he's looking to getting into that so he can craft his skills.
Right, right.
Okay.
Which is I think is a beautiful thing, because he also gets to understand all of his skills, and not only become a asset to himself, but an asset to his community, and be productive in honing his skills. He'll be able to write music and things of that nature and stuff like that.
Right.
I had a couple of people go through there and actually complete the course, and some that haven't and still have been successful in their own terms.
Right.
Okay.
But I totally understand. Okay. On the part, I would say stick with the on the financial part. I would say stick with Tahaka and stick with this show, and with knowledge, he will understand the contracting side of things, and understand the, like he says, the business aspect as well. So it's like
right.
a double-edged sword.
Yeah, law and finances. To me, this is where I see it. Okay, if they took law out of school and they took knowledge about wealth out of school. Well, let's take these two things right here and let's check them out. Let's put them under the microscope and see, look at all the nuts and bolts and wiggle pins about each one of them, see how they correlate and connect to one another. And presto changeo, there's a big piece of that puzzle that's been missing. Law and commerce. Now, area code 215, what you think about that? Excuse me, what you think about that? What'd you say?
216.
Okay, 216. What'd you think?
Oh yeah, I'm with that wholeheartedly.
Okay. All right. Well, what we need to understand is this right here. We are dealing with a game inside the United States. The United States of America wants us to clearly understand, and I can't blame them, that there's no place else on earth better than the United States. But let's say that that's true, that's fine. But what if we go someplace else? Should we not take the wealth of knowledge that we already have with us? Why would we be more concerned about what we're going to pack in our bags and how well-dressed we are to go to another country over and above the biggest and best package that we're bringing with us? which is the sum total of what we know inside our brain in the form of rules, regulations, disciplines, and principles. So if we continue to arm ourselves with knowledge, which is power, then we're prepared to not only deal inside the United States, but no matter where we go. Because if we look at a situation like this, let's go all the way down to the ground on this situation. Let's say that me and Joe was inside the United States. What we know, this is all we know that we got. This is all we got. But we decide that we're going to leave the United States and go someplace else for a month. And we discover that there's a catastrophe that happens in the United States, and the United States have a very, very serious problem, but it doesn't affect us so much physically because we're someplace else. We're concerned about our loved ones, but we still have to survive where we are. But let's say that the area that we're in, we're surrounded by native people, and the people are impoverished. Right? We've learned about network marketing. We learned about wealth principles and all this stuff. What if we took these principles and stuff that we knew to survive to the point where we can set up a barter system among the people where we are, where we I'll be responsible for getting 10, Joe will be responsible for getting 10, and we'll teach each one of these 10 how to get 10 more, and we can start growing our own food. We can bother throughout the whole system. We have an amazing thing going on there. That's quite amazing. So to me, opposed to being concerned about packaging and what's in the luggage, I think that the biggest suitcase lays on our shoulders. What do you think about that, 216-972?
Oh, I think it's a fabulous idea, actually. If you can, if you're able, that's the only way that, as a people, I think that we're going to be financially free is if whatever we get on, and you're good at that, Tahaka, because I know that whatever you stumble on as a great opportunity that you think you can teach, you always pass it along to me. And then it's my job to pass it along to somebody else and things of that nature so that we can all be successful in it.
Well, yeah. You got to make other people successful as you go along. I've been learning that stuff there a long time ago. And when I get stuck on something that works, oh, we're going to work this other thing and everybody else is going to benefit from it. That's just my way. But I'm not going to live forever, so I got to make sure that when I lay close my eyes and I lay down and go into the grave, this thing's still going on. And the people who don't like me, they can say, "Well, oh my goodness, he's dead," but he done. There's a whole lot of them that doing the same thing he was doing, and they, what are we gonna do about them? And ain't nothing we can do. There's too many of them. So it's the basic same principle, and if you look in your Bible, it's already listed there. It's the same thing is right there. It's not brand new. It's ancient, because we have to ask ourselves a question: how is it that our ancient ancestors ruled the world, period, for hundreds of thousands of years? So a lot of the stuff that we are stumbling on today and people are labeling as brand new, is facing one thing that can never be overturned, and that one thing goes just like this: there is nothing new under the sun.
That's true.
Okay.
Well, if you decide to leave or something happened to you, please leave it whatever you got in good hands.
I can hardly hear you, brother. What you saying now? You sound kind of muffled.
I said, if something did happen to you, please leave whatever you have for somebody to keep on passing this knowledge to the brother.
Please leave the knowledge. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we're doing that right now. We're putting it down. I ain't never seen no Hearst backed up to a funeral attached to a bank and bringing it, trying to take that down there with them. We can't take nothing with us. And I understood something a long time ago. Our duty is to do as much good for as many people as we can possibly do. And to me, that's living. That is living. There are times that we should have rejuvenation periods where we are able to be faced with our own selves without extraction, distraction, and so that we can think and plan and go to the next thing. But then we should be involved in accumulating what it will take to be effective to help other people inside the world. And if you start doing these things, you'll discover that you're going to be placed in positions by fate and by the gods to help, period. You're going to be put in these positions. That's just a way of life. So your nature is going to kick in. You can't get rid of that. But my main focus is to try to get people to understand that you should love yourself because first, because you cannot afford to love anyone else until you love yourself first. And you love yourself, your children, your wife, your family, your cousins, your uncle. And you have to have these things first instilled in you so that you are prepared now to officially look at somebody else. But we have been given some things about we should turn that around. We're the only people that should not think that way. No. So we got to turn that around. We got to change some of that kind of stuff and take a realistic look at ourselves. I mean, in my opinion, I don't know nobody on the planet that can do it like us. The record of history bears that out. The record of our ancient story bears that out, and history bears that out. Two different things. So when we look at it, then you know it. We can relax and to an extent, and just go ahead on and do what we got to do. And the methods and techniques change, but principles never change. I'm gonna say that one more time. Methods and techniques change, but principles never change. I hope the world got it. And as long as we concentrate on doing these things and position ourselves, because see, the thing is, I think what happens with people is they try to do things collectively and totally overlooking the fact that we need to start looking in the mirror and correcting what we need to do with us individually. When we start doing that, then we're well on our way to becoming the battery, an energized battery to energize other people as we go along. 216, what you think about that?
That's great. I mean, because successful people make other people successful, and you know, that's why I really appreciate, you know what I'm saying, everything that you do. I tune in every time I get a chance to do so, whenever I see you post up a link, a show, or something, I try to get involved with that because I try to surround myself with, people that's moving in the same direction. Because, more so than any other people on this planet, and mainly inside the United States, black African people over here is we are totally complacent. You know, just like you said earlier in the show, you know, we are totally complacent, and it's very hard to get the vast majority of our people out of that mindset of just being like a total consumer, because you got consumers, then you got entrepreneurs, and see, some people are just great consumers, and then you have great entrepreneurs, and we just got to know, you know, what side of the ball we on and where we want to be at. And like what you were just saying earlier, you'll never be able to get nowhere unless you start to know yourself and have love and respect for yourself. Well, the history of our people in this country, that has been beaten completely up out of us. You know, that's mm-hmm. why we are attached. You know, we are detached from our roots and latching on to somebody else. We trying to live life through somebody else's, culture and identity, you know, whatever. So, you know, black African people over here in the United States are just so that much complacent that's why I, myself, I try to surround myself and just totally keep myself, busy doing something constructive, man, instead of destructive. I try to do that anyway. You know, I go out my way to try to do that. So, I just appreciate anything that you do. That's why I tune in every show.
Okay. Well, I certainly appreciate it, brother. And I thank you for tuning in. And we're going to get better and better as we go along. And I'm going to try to do my best. I'm going to drop a little bit more science for y'all to understand, for those of you who have network marketing, you're involved on the Internet and all of this stuff here. This is what you have to understand about dealing with people online. I'll take one person. If you do right by that one person and you take the time to what time you have to help that person become successful, and even if they haven't totally completed what they're trying to do, if they're moving in the right direction and they're accomplishing something, or they feel that they're accomplishing something, you haven't crossed them, you haven't hurt them, you haven't injured them, you've only told them the truth, and they have succeeded in some kind of ways with you, what they will do is they will look at what else you have to offer. And after that, they will look at what else you have to offer. We're being led to believe inside the United States that we got to do something different with everybody and collect everybody, do something. No. Satisfy customers. If you're selling something online, you want to satisfy a customer, and you're looking for repeat business. But what you would discover is your satisfied customer is your repeat business. That's the one. Because if he's satisfied, he succeeded with the first thing that he got from you, he's going to be constantly looking for whatever else you're offering because he got a good deal with you. So then what we use is we want to make whatever it is that we are offering worth more than the money it takes to buy. whatever you're offering, it's going to be worth more than the money it takes to buy. And you're going to have to stand behind whatever it is that you're offering. These are principles. And these are principles. If you use these principles, then you'll be all right. You'll make it. You'll go far. It doesn't matter if you're selling sardines, freshies. You're making sure they deliver on time. You're making sure that if someone has a problem with a can of your sardines, you got to deal with that. You got to make it good. And that alone breeds repeat business, because the biggest advertisement and the most powerful advertisement in the world is word of mouth. That's it. If you master the principles, methods and techniques change, but principles never change. If you master the principles and use the principles, whatever it is that you're trying to do, then you'll make it. You'll be all right. That doesn't mean that you won't fail. And just like Robert Kiyosaki said, congratulations, you're going to fail. But if you know you're going to fail, you want to do it quickly and you want to do it responsibly so you can get it past you so you can keep on going. Winners never quit, and quitters never win. Think big. And these are just the highlights of what we covered here this evening, and there's a lot more of stuff that we're going to get in. And make sure that if you're on Facebook or you're on LinkedIn or your social sites, send me a free request to Tahaka Amana Elbay. That's T-A-R-H-A-K-A. And Amana is spelled A-M-A-A-N-A, and then Elbay, E-L, and then B-E-Y. I'm just one person, but I try to stay actively providing the people what it's going to take for them to be successful, because I know that I can't be successful unless you be successful. That's just a principle. That's one of the foundational principles on this planet, and that's what I do. But I'm not overly concerned about what I'm doing, because I'm gonna do that. But what I'm personally looking for is somebody else who's doing the same thing and succeeding. They may have something going on totally different from what I'm doing. But my question is, are you succeeding at it? And what principles are you going about? They may have five principles right and have one wrong. That's okay. I ain't messing with you. But sooner or later, you're going to learn about that last one. You're going to get it right, and you're going to make it, because I want you to make it. You know, whether I'm getting anything out of it or not, I want you to make it, because I'm only going to live a certain amount of time, and after I'm gone, I'm gone, and I'm trying to lay down as much track for the train to ride on as I can. And I hope we all adopt that principle, because that's the same thing that our grandmothers and grandfathers and great-great-grandmothers and grandfathers did for us. So we have to keep that legacy going. And we can never get to the point, it's not good for us to get to the point where, I don't want nothing else to do with that. I'm finna just abandon winners never quit, and quitters never win. And we're winding down now. We're in the last 5 minutes. What we're going to do is I'm still working on with my technicians and stuff to get the final touches made, but Tahaka, new website is up and running. Everything is functioning properly, and we'll have the codes and stuff for our ancient library coming up shortly. But anything you need, if you want to cancel your mortgage contracts, if you want to do your student loan, if you want to deal with your credit cards and banks and stuff, and you want to know about how to get into your survival mode and all this stuff, all of these things are there at www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. new debt, DEBTelimination.com. And so y'all stay tuned. We'll be posting this stuff out. And when I get through with tonight's broadcast, I probably won't deal with it tonight, but tomorrow in early in the morning I'll be able to send it out. So you all can give me a touch bases with me in the morning, and we'll be able to do keep on going, okay? And I certainly appreciate all my guests that have called in this evening and shared their thoughts on what we're discussing here this evening. I thank you so much. And keep in mind that newdebtelimination.com up top, for those of you who come to my wealth building class, we have a wealth building class link up top where you can go back and listen to all of the free conference calls that we had. We got them all there. Just listen. As we go along, we're going to be adding new ones there. Okay? All right. I've been your host, Tahaga Amana LB, and y'all have a good evening, and until next time, okay? ¶¶